TGRT Gaming Podcast, episode 570, recorded on April 21st, 2020.
Welcome to the 560th edition of the TD Gaming Podcast and 403rd episode of Video Game Roundtable. I am TJ Denzer.
I am Scott Turk.
And I am Jonah Fallon.
The VGRT Gaming Podcast focuses on game news from around the industry and a gaming flashback.
So yeah, we took a week off, just couldn't do anything last week, so, you know, and also there was no real news worth speaking of. I mean, there were smatterings here and there, but nothing really to discuss. Besides, we already know what's going on.
Yeah.
There are some news items that have been popping up that we're not going to discuss. There's a rumor. It's all but confirmed there's going to be an expansion for Animal Crossing. So it's not confirmed yet, so it wasn't enough to push the other news out this week.
You didn't see the Nintendo Switch video where they show the stuff coming for April?
Yeah, it's okay, but it's not really all that big a news. I mean, Microsoft also showed off their Cyberpunk 2077 gamepad. To me, it's sort of like saying, oh, that's a nice DualSense. Check this out.
Yeah, it's a nice controller.
Yeah, but it's an Xbox One controller. You know, I'm already looking forward to the Series X, and the Series X has three buttons on it.
It looks like it would come apart because it has a
yeah, it has that little jagged thing through the middle.
Yeah.
No, it doesn't come apart, but it looks like it.
I mean, it still looks like a PlayStation 4 controller to me, just a little extra chonky, but
Well, this gamepad or the DualSense 5 gamepad?
The DualSense 5.
Oh, okay.
You know what I hate about the PlayStation controllers? And I was talking to someone else about this. I don't understand why they can't put just a little bit of plastic on the bottom of the controller that makes it so it doesn't sit on the R2 and L2 buttons when you put the controller down flat. Because the R2 and L2 buttons on the PlayStation 4 controller are already super sensitive, and it's sounding like with all the things they're doing with haptic feedback and all that and like basically tension on the DualSense controller, it's going to be even more so. So like, why the hell would you build the controller so that when you put it down in a normal way, it sits directly on those buttons?
That is a good point. They are very. They stick out very much, and they're very easy to trigger, so you'd almost have to have the game paused and out of the game to make sure it's not doing any feedback. But even then, it's draining power doing that, so, yeah.
There should be a way for you to, and all gamepads, really. I would like it if there's a switch on a gamepad, which basically turns off all input. No matter what you do until you switch it back on.
Yeah. I remember with PS3, I used to have to bring up the little, square menu, I think it was, or something, where I could turn off a controller manually that way. But that would be nice to have a switch on the controller. Because if you accidentally hit it, and he's like, no, I didn't want to turn this on. So that does happen.
You know, the DualSense 5, though, has also made people speculate that the PlayStation 5 will be white.
Yeah, that's what I was hearing, too. It wasn't a very attractive-looking controller, and a lot of people I were talking to were like, white technology just gets dirty that much faster. Dust, like, shows up that much sooner on it.
I don't mind. I liked my white Xbox 360. I mean, you have to keep it clean, damn it. You know, you can't just let it sit around there. I mean, I don't know. Does Sony have the same because Microsoft has the GamePad Lab, you know, in which you can create any color gamepad that you want, you know, with different colors and all that stuff. Does Sony do the same thing?
Yes. Well, they have a huge variety of controllers now.
You can get, like, no, I mean customizable, that you can just, you know, okay, I want the faceplate white and the buttons blue.
Yeah, they
and
don't
the trigger's
have
red.
Okay. They have to pay a lot.
Yeah, they don't have the lab like what Xbox has, to where you can like just like pick your colors and design your controller.
There is, I don't know if there's an official one that's doing it with Nintendo Switch, or it was an unofficial person. It's very expensive, but you could get different colors, like a maroon and purple Joy-Con. So there is that.
But it was, well, in this expensive case, they're only $10 more when you do the Game Lab, and it's basically assembly line stuff. You know, I mean, anybody can go to it and just fool around with the. I sometimes just go to fool around with the colors, like make a red, white, and blue gamepad and all that stuff. I will say this, my Xbox One Project Scorpio gamepad is getting a little janky. It still works, but it just seems a little looser. So it's tough, though. I mean, I may I'm going to hold out for the Xbox Series X and just, you know, get that new gamepad.
Yeah, I wish they would do something like that for PlayStation, but it's probably costly to have all those customizable options. I wonder, like, I don't know how much. I can't imagine that, like. Well, I guess I don't know. I'm thinking to myself, is it conscientiously feasible to have that many colors, and does it make sense to have that many colors for Xbox controllers, and just have them on hand?
I will say this: PDP makes really good controllers. They last a long time too.
Yeah, I do know that SCUF was doing a version of a PlayStation 4 controller lab, but then they got bought by Corsair. So, like, who knows what's going on there?
Yeah. I may go to PDP to get a wired controller, because as much as I like having a wireless controller, I just like the idea of not having, you know, the slight little lag that you have with wireless controllers. And one of the things they do that I like is they do the see-through game pads that have lights in them. So basically you have a glowing controller.
You like that?
Yeah. Oh, they have the Super Smash Bros. Ultimate Wired Fight Pad Pro Luigi Edition and Peach and Mario.
Wow, that's cool.
Yeah, and here's the kicker. They're only $25.
Not bad.
Yeah. Oh, and Jigglypuff. They're pretty looking. I mean, the Luigi one is green. The Mario one is red. The Peach one is white with pink and... Yeah, they're pros. They're pro controllers. And the Jigglypuff is white with pink. Just go to pdb.com and look at the controllers. They're the first ones they're showing, and they're all $25. They're pretty good. And like I said, the good thing about PDP is their stuff lasts. Oh, they have a Fight Pad Pro for Link, too, which is blue. I don't get that. Is pink supposed to be blue? The Pichu one is black with yellow controls.
Huh.
So, anyways, I always like the Rock Candy controllers. They're really, really inexpensive. They cost $20, but they last, which is the most important thing. Oh, they do have a Pikachu one, but instead of being black with yellow buttons, it's yellow with gray buttons. Sorry, I'm just distracted because I really like PDP's stuff.
Huh.
This has been brought to you by PDP. Should check out the Rock Candy wired controller Cosmo Berry. It's translucent purple. Anyways, so yeah, there's been some stuff that some stuff that we're not going to be discussing, but we should be discussing what we've been playing, and we already know what Scott's been playing. So TJ, what have you been playing?
So I've been jumping into the Final Fantasy VII reboot, and I've gotten to about chapter, I would say, 6 on it, and there's 18 chapters in the game. So I'm a good chunk of the way through, and I got to say, It's probably game of the year material for a lot of people.
For a lot of people, yes. Hey, Scott, have you been playing Final Fantasy VII in between your Animal Crossing gameplay?
I played the demo. I haven't bought the game yet. I do plan on getting it.
You know what? Here's the thing, Scott. Why not? You don't have to play it now because you already know how it ends. Just wait until both parts come out. Then you play them back to back. So you don't have to have that waiting period of the game ending halfway through. And then you have to sit and wait for the game for the next.
That is a good argument. Unfortunately, I feel like this will be spoiled all to hell. People will make memes to no end. And it will be impossible to avoid them. Because people just love spamming that shit.
Well, let me ask you, TJ, is the game that much different than the original?
Yes.
Plot-wise? Oh, okay. But why would you even just block out all mentions of Final Fantasy in your Twitter feed? I don't get it.
I might as well just never go to Twitter or Facebook.
Yeah, but the problem with that, you don't know when the next part is coming out. That's the problem.
I mean, if they've done something different, I would like to be surprised. I would enjoy that.
Well, apparently, according to TJ, they did change some stuff, so.
I'm hearing it from other people, too. They're saying there's some significant differences here. And
it's not just some stuff. It feels like it's different enough. I mean, it does hit a lot of the similar beats that you should expect.
And you're like in the first quarter of the game. You said Chapter 6 of 18?
Yeah.
You're already seeing it?
Yeah, I'm about a third of the way through the game, and I would say that it is vastly different from what you'd seen when you played through the first when you
went. I felt like the action mechanics for the battles already made the game feel different. You know, you got a different pacing. You don't have to wait. You know, turn-based. You know, action versus turn-based is a really different feel of a game, and this one would help you feel more. Like the action is a continuing thing and you're not stopping for random battles.
Are you recording, Scott?
I am.
Okay, just making sure because this says it's recording, but it only says recording on. Usually it shows the amount that it's been recording. What happens is I'm not using my speakers. I'm actually using my headphones, the headphones on my thing because sometimes I'll get feedback, not feedback, but slight echo from you guys from coming from the speaker. So I'm trying this and listening to you on my headphones, speakers instead, so that there's no doubling. I'm just wondering because it says recording on monitoring, but it isn't showing me recording any. It doesn't show the actual size, which makes me.
I see the file size on mine. It's going up.
Yeah, but on mine, I don't know.
Yeah, I know. I'm sorry. That sucks.
Sort by name.
Okay, but that's good at least. Got a recording, but back to Final Fantasy. I felt like the combat game, the combat changes I felt was a significant feel difference. You know, it would give somebody a different experience versus turn-based. Because I know that a lot of people that like action don't like the turn-based aspects of the older Final Fantasy games. They want that tactile. I swing my sword with the A button, not I swing my I hit A and wait for them to go swing. You know, they want that feel of being in the moment, and that I think this action gives that to them. And now there's story differences. I'm wondering how much of a deviation is it?
A lot, but it feels good. I mean, the changes that they've made to it don't feel like wasteful, annoying changes. It just feels like a new game.
I know when I was playing it, I got to know the minor Avalanche players, Jesse, and there was two other guys, and I felt like I cared about them a little bit more now. I felt like I understood them better. You know, I felt like they were already being expanded just in that one moment. You know, they were making little jokes with each other and, trying, like, the big guy was, like, trying to say, oh, I like you, Cloud. I bet you're a good guy. And Cloud's like, yeah, whatever.
Yes. It is very much Biggs Wedge and Jesse, and they play a vastly, vastly improved role in Final Fantasy Remake. I've really enjoyed how much depth it has given those characters, despite the fact that, and I'm not the only one that thinks this, Biggs straight up looks and sounds like Charlie Sheen to the point where Charlie Sheen could probably sue.
I think you'd be flattered.
Like, if you ever look up a clip of Biggs talking, just look up any clip of Biggs talking and tell me that dude doesn't look like Charlie Sheen and sound like Charlie Sheen for that.
It's definitely not recording. Shit. Uh-oh. Okay, you'll just have to send me the sound file.
Okay.
I don't know why it's not recording, because it should say recording. Does it have to go through my speakers? I don't get this. That's weird.
Yeah, he does kind of look like Charlie Sheen. The eyebrows really kind of do that. He has that intense look.
Yeah, definitely. It's definitely in the eyebrows. But he sounds crazy. But it sounds like him too. Like, as if the guy just like went straight on, I'm gonna do Charlie Sheen. I'm gonna do my best Charlie Sheen impression for this character. There's nothing wrong with it. It's just like, it's almost distracting.
Wow. Oh, I get it now. Fuck. Let me try that now. Yep, now it's recording. You know what happened? I had it recording through my speakers, but the speakers are not working because I had to replace it with my. And now it's saying, oh, no, you're recording. Fuck you. Fuck you. With a side of I'll just have to use Scott's recording.
Okay.
Hello?
Yeah, still here.
Hello?
Hello?
Yeah, we're here. I'm here.
Hello?
Can you not hear us now? Uh-oh.
Hello?
Can you still hear me, Scott?
Uh-oh.
Yes, I can. I can hear you.
Hello?
Now what?
I mean, I'm still here. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
Hello?
Hello? Yes.
Oh, God. Okay, so it has to go through my speakers, apparently. This is fucking weird.
Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
Oh.
That's why I couldn't hear you, because I switched it. Yeah, it has to go through my speakers, and that makes no fucking sense to me.
That is, yeah, that doesn't. That's an output. It shouldn't. That, yeah, it's weird.
Okay. So, anyways, moving on. You were saying.
Final Fantasy VII Remake is awesome.
No, you said Charlie Sheen. Okay, so let's get beyond that. Scott, what have you? How far in Animal Crossing have you gotten?
I've done pretty good. I've expanded my house to the 3 rooms around it, but now is a pretty big debt I have to pay Tom Doug now. It's like 700,000 grand, so that's going to take a while to do. But in the meantime, I am having fun decorating my island. I have blossom lanterns all over the place, and I have a little road to a commercial shop area, and then the residential zone is in a different spot with, you know, little roads, and I got a path to the museum, and I got a garden enclosed with a wall, and so yeah, I got like a 4-star island now, and it's getting there.
Whoop-de-doo.
Are you excited for the new events?
Yes, I am. I'm looking forward to seeing Red again and Life or Leaf, however you pronounce it, want to pronounce it. I think considering that he represents Earth Day and plants, I think they're saying Leaf. So I think some people actually pronounce it Life anyways. But so it'll be fun. He'll have new plants to sell you, and hopefully you can get all the different flowers that you've been trying to get by going to the freaking Nook Mystery Island. And then there's the museum's going to get expansion with art, of course, and then the llama couple is coming back, and you'll be able to do, I guess, anniversary pictures with them, and you'll have, I guess, better reason to go to Harvey's Island to do photo ops with people and get probably miles from that or other rewards. So it looks like this game is getting more in depth with each update and the more stuff they put into it. It's a big improvement over past incarnations of the game.
I think that's kind of one of the benefits that that Animal Crossing New Horizons gets out of the new generation of games, is that they can just add stuff to that game ad nauseum as much as they want. I mean, it's literally like we live in an age where you can just update the game as and treat it as a games as a service thing. So like I'd heard rumblings that people were saying they'd come to the end of their debt and they were running out of things to do and they weren't sure what to do with the game after that point.
So just get back in debt.
So yeah, there's that, but like there's also all these sort of holiday activities like Earth Day or June is going to be like apparently an entire month of like marriage stuff where you help certain villagers with their anniversary or whatever. And that sounds like it's going to be interesting. And then there's like a International Museum Day where you're going to have all sorts of like a stamp collection type activity to go with the museum. So it's not even just like doing these things around these like weird holiday type things, but it's also making them different and varied.
Yeah. And this is I think since Animal Crossing is a sandbox kind of genre game, it's very easy to just add stuff to it. You don't have to worry about story structure or anything like that. You just have this world that you're just thrown in and you add whatever you want and it makes it very flexible. Mm.
Just for me, I've been so bored, I've dived back into Mass Effect Andromeda just because there's nothing else to do and it's something else. And
don't you have like hundreds of Steam games to play?
Yeah, but none of them, I don't know. I mean, I have been playing a lot of Bus Simulator 18. That's because I got the expansion, which is coming out for review. So other than that, you know, there's nothing else really. I mean, in terms of games that are compelling, I just, you know, I'm getting back into my Xbox 360, and I'm thinking about buying Beautiful Katamari. It's been a while since I played that Katamari Damacy, and you know, at least I'll get achievements. I don't even know if I think I rented it a long time ago.
I don't think you can go wrong with a Katamari Damacy game.
Well, you can, because they did a re-release of the first one, and the reason why a lot of people don't like it is because we love Katamari is better, because it's basically a remaster of the first game, and a lot of people wonder, well, you know, why not just include both games in one package, you know? But anyways, but yeah, Beautiful Katamari, I haven't played that sort of game in a long time, and yes, I know about Donut County. I'm not getting it.
Oh, but it's, you know, good.
You know, there's I prefer putting things on my sticky ball, and things that were big and threatened me before, now I can just take revenge on. By the way, there's another Rock of Ages coming out. It may have already come out. I don't think it has, but Rock of Ages 3, I think, is the new one coming out. I might check that one out when it comes out. For those of you who don't know, Rock of Ages is basically you're a ball, or a stone ball, and you go over things. I mean, Lichspear and Cluster Truck are still on Game Pass. Lichspear is okay. I haven't played Cluster Truck yet. Oh wait, there is a game that was a very indie game that's on Game Pass. It is called Sea Salt, and it's a game in which you play a high priest of Cthulhu or a Cthulhu type character, and basically it's like Overlord or Pikmin sort of, in which you summon creatures to attack things for you. So you start off with dozens of rats. And then you get worms, and you kill people by swarming them and eating them alive. So there's that. It's very retro. It's very 8-bit. It has its charms. I don't know if I recommend it. It's very simple. But yeah, Sea Salt. Check it out. There's another Game Pass game. It's about cats. It's called Gato Roboto. And it looks like it looks sub NES. It actually reminds me of games that were on the Nintendo 64. I'm sorry, the Commodore 64.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Of course, it's impossible because it does things that those computers could never do. It just has the aesthetic, but it has tons and tons and tons of objects on the screen, and you play a cat in a robot suit. Fighting against mice in a robot suit. Yeah.
Yeah, that was a Devolver one. That one looked fun.
Yeah. You know what game I would love to play, but I can't, and that's the Heave Ho. But you can't play it alone. It's pointless to play that alone. You have to have other people in the same room with you, which is not possible these days.
Right. That's unfortunate.
Yeah.
You can't play that online with someone.
It's not the same thing, and I don't even know if you can play online. I think it's meant to be same computer co-op.
Okay.
But Heave Ho is great. It's a party game. It's a hardcore party game. Do you know which one that is, Scott?
Yes, Heave Ho is the one with this like two little guys, and they have arms, and they
up to four people, yeah. And when they fall, they die with a blood splatter.
Yeah, a little paint splatter.
Actually, you know, my board game group can't meet, of course. So I actually ran a Jackbox party this past weekend. Which is possible because you just live stream it and people just get on their cell phones and do the answers.
Yeah, I love Jackbox. It's so easy to get into that game, and it kind of feels like an interactive board game in that way.
It doesn't hurt that I get them for free. I have all the Jackboxes except for the first one.
I've had many a good time with the likes of Fibbage and Drawful.
Yeah. I like number 6 has something called Dictionarium, in which you create – it's like Urban Dictionary the game. So yeah. Anyways, we're going to move to the game of the gaming flashback, and I know TJ has all sorts of opinions on this game, and I'm surprised we didn't do a gaming flashback of it before. I know we've discussed it a lot, but it did come out in 2010. So yeah, TJ, talk about the best of the series.
Fallout New Vegas is a post-apocalyptic action role-playing game developed by Obsidian Entertainment and published by Bethesda Softworks. It was announced in April 2009 and released for Microsoft Windows, PlayStation 3, and Xbox 360 on October 19, 2010. A spin-off of the Fallout series, the game is set in a post-apocalyptic open-world environment that encompasses a region of Arizona. Consisting of Arizona, California, and Nevada. It is set in a world that deviated onto an alternate timeline thanks to atomic age technology, which led to a global nuclear apocalypse in the year 2077 in an event referred to as the Great War, caused by a major conflict between the U.S. and China over natural resources. The main story of New Vegas takes place in the year 2281, 4 years after the events of Fallout 3, and 204 years after the bombs fell. It is not a direct sequel, but does mark the return of several elements found in Fallout 2. Players take control of a character known as the Courier. While transporting a package across the Mojave Desert to the city of New Vegas, the courier is ambushed, robbed of the package, shot, and left for dead. After surviving, the courier begins a journey to find their would-be killer and recover the package. Makes friends and enemies among various warring factions, and ultimately becomes caught up in a conflict that will determine who controls New Vegas and the Mojave Wasteland. 6 add-on packs were released, titled Dead Money, Honest Hearts, Old World Blues, Lonesome Road, Gunrunner's Arsenal, and Courier's Stash. Overall, the player's level cap has increased by 20, starting at 30, and up to 50 with all the add-ons installed. The New Vegas received positive reviews, with critics praising the game's writing, quests, and improved gameplay, though it was criticized for its glitches and bugs on launch. It was a commercial success, shipping more than 5 million copies, and is estimated to have sold around 12 million copies worldwide.
Gee, an Obsidian game that launches with bugs. How can that possibly be? But yeah, for those who don't know, TJ gushes about this game constantly. Scott, too. Scott, you prefer New Vegas to the other Fallout games, right?
I have not played New Vegas at all.
Whoa.
I've played Fallout 3, Fallout 4, and, of course, Fallout 1 and 2. Well, and those are the ones I prefer.
Here's the biggest difference between this game and those games. In this game, your choices actually matter. They really do matter. I mean, in Bethesda's mainline stuff, you may get a different ending, sign with a faction and all that. But here in New Vegas, everything you do has repercussions. In a serious way, not just a surface way. I mean, come on, it's Chris Avellone. He loves this kind of stuff.
Right. I think Josh Hori was also on this one too, and I'm just kind of tired of factions and dealing with them, and they all just seem to be a different kind of jerk, and I just. I'm tired of them, I guess.
Well, you gotta hate this one then, because it like was the one that went balls to the wall on Fallout factions.
Yeah.
Fallout 3 like played with it with the Brotherhood of Steel, and in fact they've all played with it a little bit with Brotherhood of Steel and the Enclave and that stuff.
But Caesar's like, Legions, Jesus.
Caesar's Legion, the New California Republic, the House, Mr. House, who is the enigmatic leader of New Vegas. And then there's just like there's a ton of sub groups that are like the Boomers, the Powder Gang, and just like all these little groups of people that you meet along the way that develop an affinity either for or against you, depending on how you act in your quests.
But here's the thing, though, about the factions. All of them have real motivations. I mean, the most vile of them, Caesar's Legion, you know, your first encounter with them is that they've taken an entire town, beheaded most of them, crucified almost everybody else. The person who came in second in their lottery had his leg smashed, and the one guy who won the lottery is ecstatic because they let him go. As vile as they are, they have a point. They aren't mustache twirling villains. They're just extremists.
Can you tell me what that point is? Because I'm just hearing mustache twirling villain right now.
They think that the NCR is weak and they've done nothing about crime. Because here's the thing: the area of New Vegas is a shithole, and NCR has really been unable to stop any of the bad stuff that's going on. They're basically ineffective. And Caesar's Legion said, no, we're going to put our foot down. We're going to be as vile as possible to scare people into being good. You know, it's a typical bring order to everything. But as bad as they are, they actually have a believable motivation and a point, you know, unlike, say, the Outer Worlds, in which the company are morons and there's no reason to side with them. At least if you decide for whatever reason to side with Caesar Legions, there is a reason to do it. You know, even in Fallout 4, there wasn't a reason to go with the Institute, you know. And, you know, I'd like to think that Bethesda looked at Fallout New Vegas and made the Institute bad but not too bad, you know, so that you'd actually have a reason to go with them. Because in Fallout 3, I don't know. There was only one side and the other side, and no one cared. I mean, you could be an asshole. You could be an asshole in Fallout 3, and that's it.
I played a lot with the factions that Josh introduced in the Pillars games, because he continues the whole faction mechanic in that game, storytelling mechanic in both of those games. And in the second one, you have a group of group of islanders, and then a group of colonists that are basically trying to colonize the place, but they're a trading corporation colonists. and they just all kind of come off a little obnoxiously fanatic about their point
okay.
of view.
Okay, let me put it another way, Scott. If you choose to be a villain in Fallout New Vegas, Caesar's Legion is not stupid evil. They're not stupid evil. They're smart. You know, so you don't feel like you're joining a bunch of morons if you decide you want to be evil in Fallout New Vegas. Let me put it that way.
You can be downright awful in Fallout New Vegas. It has maybe one of my most favorite evil choices that has ever been put in a video game, which is spoiler on a very, very, very old game. Once you meet Mr. House, you find out that he's basically a dilapidated corpse in a that's basically hooked up to life support that's controlling everything that has to do with New Vegas, but through a neural network. So what you can do is, if you want to go the House route, you can take over from Mr. House. And you can decide whether or not you want to kill him or let him live. But if you decide to let him live, you can do it in a – or you decide whether you want to kill him or follow him. But the third choice is that you let him live and just sit in his little corpse bed and watch as you take over everything that he's ever done.
Yeah.
Which is just like, oh my God, that is a living hell. A nightmarescape of like the worst thing imaginable, that you take over this man's life's work and make him watch you take credit for everything he's ever done.
The other reason to play is that this game also has the best expansions of any of the Fallout games, and in most RPGs too. I mean, there's one which is really whacked out and weird. I think it's Old World Blues, in which you basically go – is it a vault? A vault where there's disembodied brains?
Yes.
And you go into a fantasy world because you become a disembodied brain yourself.
That does sound crazy, yeah.
It's fun. It's fun. You also get the chance to see the world before it was flipped over and barbecued.
Yeah, you do seem to get less of that choice when you go into Fallout 4, for instance. You can't really do much with them, because it's like, I remember with the, I forgot what they were called now, but you, the first group that you meet, and you can't, I don't know, they're just like, I feel like they could have gone into more depth with the factions involved.
The People's Liberation Army?
Yeah, I think that's the one, yeah.
Yeah, they're from China.
No, I mean, god damn it, the
Minutemen, oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, they just don't, there's not really much to do with their faction, you know, they don't.
You're kidding.
They're kind of reactionary to everything else around them.
You're kidding. Dude, I always side with the Minutemen. And
right.
What I love to do is I love to take down the Institute without having made any promises to the Railroad or the Brotherhood. And the Railroad are fine. They say, well, you know, it's good. We're glad you did it, but you know what? I wish you had told us. We would have gone with you. And you can, by the way, do a coordinated attack with the Minutemen and the Railroad and do it that way too. But what my favorite part is that Elder Maxson thought that the Minutemen were chumps and could do nothing. And he's seriously disturbed that they just went and defeated the Institute all by themselves without any help. And it's like, oh, crap. They're actually more powerful than I thought they were.
Yeah.
And I just love that scared expression. He's subtly scared. Because this guy is a prick. TJ?
Yeah, I mean, I love Fallout New Vegas so much that when it came to Fallout 4, you know, it's a funny thing. When you were talking about the different... When you were talking about the difference between Fallout 4 and Fallout New Vegas, I thought you were going to say there's a soul in New Vegas. It's not that Fallout 4 doesn't have any soul. It's just that, like, I don't know.
You know, here's the problem I have with Fallout 4. What is the reason for you doing your quest? You want to find your kid. But yes. He gets derailed from that mission awfully early, and it's like, oh, right, slaps it. I'm supposed to save my kid. Yeah, I almost forgot about that. Also, the other thing is that one thing that bothers me about playing Fallout 4 is that every faction immediately adopts you and makes you their number one guy almost immediately. And I'm thinking, geez, these parties are really easy to infiltrate.
That's just such a Bethesda thing, too.
In Fallout New Vegas.
Skyrim.
In Fallout New Vegas.
You quickly become number one in all of their factions as well. And equally in all of them. Like, some of these factions really shouldn't be compatible. Like, you shouldn't be Brotherhood and freaking the Dragon and Clive people or whatever. It's just
fuck that. They had it with the Thieves Guild. You could be part of the Thieves Guild and the Dark Brotherhood, and they are diametrically opposed. One is very much against not killing. And the other one's like, lol, kills, death, murder. But I'm going to say this. You know, no one trusts you in Fallout New Vegas. That's why you have the faction system. You have to earn people's trust. They're just not going to, you know. I mean, there are some places that are easy to gain the trust of, like the small, small towns. You help them, they say, oh, thank you, because they're desperate, you know. But other factions, you know, you can actually make it so that the powder gangs, who are basically just bandits, right, they kind of trust you because you didn't piss them off too much, but still have the found, you know, you can play sides off each other in Fallout New Vegas, too. The other thing is that it also has a hardcore mode.
Yes.
TJ, explain the hardcore mode.
The hardcore mode was put in the game to, like, give a more sort of realistic sense to what's going on in the game. Because, like, that was always a thing that you didn't have in Fallout games before this, where you didn't deal with hunger, you didn't deal with thirst, you didn't deal with sleep. So that was something that they decided to put in the game to, like, sort of make that a natural part of your gameplay, which was...
Yeah, if you don't take a drink in a few days, you're going to die.
And it's not just like you die. You don't just, like, die.
I know, you start getting weaker and weaker and you die, yeah.
You have various deteriorating side effects in hunger, thirst, and sleep deprivation. You can die from sleep deprivation. Mm-hmm. And,
Yeah, because here's the thing, Scott. Wasn't it kind of odd that in Fallout 4 you could just go days and days and days without having to take a nap?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think that's a thing in a lot of games, or maybe all of them.
Where well, not there's, all of them, but...
Maybe not.
Fallout,
yeah.
Like, Fallout New Vegas wanted to give sleep. People a chance. And here's the thing. You know, when you're starting to starve to death, you're going to start stealing. You don't have the caps. You're hungry. Well, you know, well, that person isn't looking. I'm just going to steal some stuff off the And I think you don't lose – there's no karma system either. There's no karma. There's only faction system. If I remember correctly, TJ, am I right? There's no karma, right? There's just the faction system?
There is karma.
Oh, okay.
There's karma in the fact that, like, you can be on the shockingly enough, you can be on the Caesar's Legion and still be a good person. You just have to get rid of Caesar.
Yeah.
But, like, the fact of the matter is, it also, like, New Vegas also had some of my favorite stories ever told in a Fallout game. And it wasn't just, like, the fact that they blatantly tell you that story. It's that they let mystique build upon itself. And I mentioned this several times before. Honest Hearts is maybe one of my most favorite DLCs ever put together. Because Honest Hearts starts at the beginning of when you start to meet people from Caesar's Legion. What I'm getting at here is that you start to learn about a sort of legendary figure among Caesar's Legion that failed to, yeah.
No, or Joshua Graham.
Joshua Graham, who was originally one of Caesar's right-hand man until he failed to in a battle to take the Hoover Dam the first time, in which Caesar couldn't accept failure from his right-hand man, so he had him covered in pitch, set on fire. Joshua Graham fell into the river and was thought to be dead, but he didn't die. And he became the burned man, and he becomes this legendary figure among the Caesar's Legion, like the boogeyman. Like if you go to sleep and you don't put your knife under your bed, the burned man will come and get you.
So Scott, here's the thing. You may be blanching at the premise of New Vegas, but you can easily get Fallout New Vegas and all the DLC for like $20 now. And it's worth the investment.
I think I saw it on sale for like $1.29 during last summer.
That was probably just Fallout New Vegas without – yeah. I mean, just the game is fine, but the DLC adds so much. I mean, they vary in quality, but you'll never have any of them and say, gee, I wish I didn't get that. Unlike, say, Fallout 4's DLC.
Yeah, that was a little bit skimpy. I mean, I liked the Far Harbor. That was fine. Yeah.
Well, everybody liked Far Harbor. It was actual content.
Yeah. The rest of the stuff is just very meh. You go through it very quickly. And I really didn't care about being a bandit leader. I just See, that's what I'm talking about. Right there, the Minutemen should have been able to have a quest to take out those bandits. That would have been their coup de grace, even more than the freaking Institute. I mean, I know the Institute was trying to take people over, but at least they would have wanted to take out these bandit lords that are pretty much the reason why their whole area is in chaos and the Institute thinks they need to go replace people to get rid of the bandits.
Yeah, here's the thing. I don't like – here's the thing. Sometimes they go too far with open worlds and do the entire do it your way thing, and sometimes I don't want to do it my way. I want to have a clear narrative and a story. Because the thing about Fallout New Vegas is that while there are side quests, you never forget what your mission is.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is good to have a narrative. Like, I'm sure the Final Fantasy VII remake has a very clear narrative. There's some side quests and stuff, but basically you're still on track with a story, and I think it's hard to it's a hard line to balance on when you want to give player choice but still have a focused storyline, and I guess that's what they were kind of complaining about with Outer Worlds, is that you didn't really have enough choice, and that the choices didn't seem to really matter in the end.
In New Vegas, it makes sense because no matter what you're doing, the overlying arching plot of the first a third of the game is that you got shot in the head by a scumbag and you need to make him pay.
Yeah. By the way, my favorite part of starting a game is that the doctor who recovers you will note your weakest and your strongest stat and talk about it. Like if you have a really, really high charisma, he'll say, well, you must be great with the ladies, you know, all that stuff. You know, if you have no strength, he says, well, you know, with your strength, you know, I would be, you know, it's just the game watches everything that you do. Again, that's Chris Avalon there. But like I said, you know, the only complaint I do have is that if you go in the wrong direction, you'll get killed really, really quickly. It's like Breath of the Wild. Go in the wrong direction, yeah, you're not going to survive 2 seconds because the monsters are way too high.
Oh, my God, yeah. The first time you ever do that, it's kind of funny, too, because, like, you go south, there's just some baby geckos and such. You go north, giant scorpions and death claws.
Well, you know, when you start off, you know, fucking bloat flies are still deadly. And the reason why they're deadly is because they're hard to see.
Yeah, they're also nearly impossible to shoot without the VAT system.
And there's also a lot of them also. It's not like there's just one. There's usually like 20 of them. Or not 20, mm-hmm. But yeah. You know what I really – here's the thing. I still have not been able to save that damn dog. That dog is suicidal.
Oh, the one that goes after the geckos?
Yeah, and it's like, stay here. I don't want you to die. It's not dog meat. It's just some dog that a woman owns. But it's sort of like you feel responsible because no matter what, that dog's going to get himself killed.
It was always the last lady, like in the third part of the quest, that got herself killed in my games. Yeah. I managed to save her one time, and she gives you a whole bunch of good stuff if you save her.
Well, then that's the reason to do it. I mean, at some point, I just used cheat codes. But like I said, Scott, if you try Fallout New Vegas, it does feel a little dated in terms of graphics and controls. Because here's the thing, if you play New Vegas after playing Fallout 4, it's sort of like you have to reorient your brain. I mean, a lot of the Pip-Boy stuff is the same, right? But a lot of the way you interact with everything is different enough that it's sort of like you have to remember, oh yeah, I can't do this, I can't do that, and all that stuff. But like Fallout 3, the game rewards you for being neutral. It rewards you even more for being neutral.
I think more games need to do that to give you more options.
Because yeah, if you're neutral in Mass Effect, you'll be underpowered, and you won't be able to do any conversation checks. Mass Effect 3 did fix that, in that reputation is now a separate statistic. So we'll see. Anyways, we're talking a lot about Fallout New Vegas, and you know, well, what could you do? Because 2010 was one of the best years ever for video games. Thinking about Red Dead Redemption and Mass Effect 2, and we haven't discussed Super Mario Galaxy 2. We haven't discussed a lot of the other stuff that came out that year. But we're gonna move on to the game news. Go ahead, TJ.
All righty, one sec. Nintendo investigating reports of accounts being breached, from Eurogamer. Nintendo has told Eurogamer that it is now actively investigating a wave of reports from Switch owners stating that their Nintendo accounts have been accessed. Yesterday, Eurogamer reported that a number of account owners had reported their Nintendo accounts accessed over the last couple weeks. A Eurogamer staff member was among these recently affected. Some accounts users reported their accounts has been used to buy digital items, such as bundles of Fortnite V-Bucks worth up to 100 euros via linked
pounds.
Oh.
But of course it would be Fortnite stuff, wouldn't it?
Yeah, via linked PayPal accounts. Today, Nintendo has responded to these reports and highlighted what you should do if you're affected. We are aware of reports of unauthorized access to some Nintendo accounts, and we are investigating the issue, a Nintendo spokesperson told Eurogamer today in response. In the meantime, we recommend that users enable the two-step verification for their Nintendo account. If any users become aware of unauthorized activity, we encourage them to take steps outlined at Nintendo account recovery process or visit Nintendo support for general support.
The thing that people are wondering is how this happened, because some are wondering, is it an internal issue? Like, was it Nintendo employees who were doing this? And by the Nintendo employees, I don't mean, you know, he's no longer with the company, but I don't mean like people like Reggie Fils-Aimé. I mean just low-level account, you know, low-level employees.
Yeah, it would be low-level, not high-level.
Especially if they're buying Fortnite V-Bucks.
Yeah. That would explain some of the stuff I was reading about it, that somehow they can bypass the login, password login, which doesn't seem like that should be, but if they're on the inside, then they would know how to, if there was any way to do that, such a thing.
Yeah. But, you know, two-step verification, people. It's the thing. Or Google authentication.
Do you know what the very funny thing about this today is? I don't know if they enabled it yesterday, but Nintendo just started talking about two-step authentication yesterday, and then today they tell people that their accounts are being illegally accessed. So it's like
– Was two-step verification available before?
I we hadn't heard of it, and we hadn't heard of it until yesterday, and then today we're hearing that people are seeing unauthorized access to their accounts.
Backward on online stuff. They're so backward. They're even more backward than Sony. And Sony had that huge break-in.
I do have to agree with that. They really are backwards. You add a friend on Switch, and if I see TJ come on, or one of my other friends, I can't quickly message them and say, hey, like on Steam, I can. I could message you and say, hey, you want to play a game or something? And I would have to use something else to contact them. It just seems really weird and strange.
Nintendo should just get Xbox Live. I mean, there's been that rumor for the past year that, you know, at some point Nintendo's just going to adopt Xbox Live. And, you know, if hand it to people who know what they're doing online. I mean, they would definitely not do it with Sony because Sony is their big, big, big competition. I mean, Microsoft's not competition really with Nintendo. I mean, Microsoft's releasing games like Ori and Cuphead on Nintendo. So there's a relationship there.
Yeah.
And Minecraft. I don't know. Fix your shit, Nintendo. Speaking of that. What? Go ahead.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I was just saying, no doubt. That is like, that is a glaring issue, and it shouldn't. And it's upsetting that they would only talk about two-step authentication immediately after, like the day before. I wonder how they had to have known about this before they did that yesterday.
They probably called up Microsoft to say, hey, how can we deal with this? Microsoft said, we have two-step authentication. Good idea. We'll try it, too. Speaking of Nintendo, go ahead, Scott.
Sure. Okay. The story, Nintendo gearing up for increased Switch production following global shortages from Eurogamer. Nintendo is preparing to boost production of Switch in an effort to meet the huge increase in demand for console seen in recent months, which has led to a scarcity of stock and, in some cases, hugely inflated prices, because of course. The company is said to have struggled with stock since February as social distancing measures introduced in China and Southeast Asia began to impact its supply chain. Shortages were exacerbated as demand climbed following the successful launch of Animal Crossing New Horizons in March and jumped still further as social distancing measures swept across the globe, leaving millions homebound searching for entertainment. As retail supplies have continued to dwindle, the console has been regularly out of stock across all major UK retailers for weeks, which some are now attributing to swift purchases by automated bots. Certain resellers have taken advantage of the situation, charging as much as double the console's retail price, as Eurogamer's Emma Kent discovered.
You know what? That's real life gold farming, folks. Yep. If you wanted to see what gold farming would be like in real life, that's what it is.
Nikkei says Nintendo has asked suppliers and contract assemblers to ready for additional production in April June quarter, which some suppliers have reportedly received revised parts orders as much as 50% larger than those originally placed. All being well, domestic deliveries of Switch should resume for online pre-orders sometime between late April and mid-May.
Here's the thing. Never buy inflated console prices ever on eBay or whatever reseller you're doing, because you'll be embarrassed 2 months later when they're in stock and shelves and you spend $100 for nothing, $100 extra for nothing or something like that.
Yeah. Don't let these price gougers win.
I remember the price gouging for the Wii U became embarrassing because no one wanted to buy a Wii U and they ended up buying Wii stock no one wanted.
Yeah, there are games that are being price gouged. Even if you look for physical copies of Suikoden 1, 2, 3, all.
Yeah, but you see that's actual. You know, I mean, if I want to buy a game that's old and out of print, then of course you're gonna have to pay high prices for it. This is not an old game. This is a new console.
Right. It is ridiculous that the price gouging that goes on and the stock will have to be. Replenished. I mean, I guess that's a console you could play if you wanted to look for something new to play, Jonah. There's lots of games on there, not just Animal Crossing and Breath of the Wild. There's a whole bunch of others.
I'll get a refurbished PS4 before I get a Switch. Okay. And with MLB The Show 21 coming to Xbox, I'm not even sure I'll even need that. I mean, there's a refurbished PS4 now for $220, which isn't too bad.
I have a PS3 and 4, and
I need
an Xbox is just kind of sitting in the corner collecting dust because I don't want to spend more money on Xbox because, you know, I have so much already
invested. But you can get beautiful Katamari.
I don't want Katamari. I have no interest in that game, and it's on PlayStation.
But you get achievements.
You get achievements on PlayStation.
No, you don't. Trophies, you get trophies. Whatever. And it's not
the same difference. It's potato, potato, same thing.
Yeah, it's mush potato on your case.
I think as soon as I think about a week into this whole global pandemic thing with the COVID happened, I started thinking, man, I am sitting around my house a lot. I would love to have a Switch Ring Fit. And as soon as I started looking, I found out real quick that scalpers beat me to the punch and there was no chance I'm getting it during this time period. I hate it because the Ring Fit sounds so cool. And they just put out like the rhythm game update for it, which looks fun.
Mm-hmm. That does look nice.
Just get a PDP gamepad.
I know.
They're nice and inexpensive, and they're pretty too, and they're durable. That's the best part. They're pretty and they're durable. You can throw that thing against the wall and it won't crack. That's not true, but you know, my PDP.
Please don't throw it against the wall.
My PDP Xbox 360 controller still works perfectly, and it's like 8 years old. And you know how gamepads are. You know, they start losing sensitivity, and you know, things just register or they'll be stuck. The PDP Xbox 360 controller still works fine, and I use it on my PC. So there's that. Anyways, this is related. COVID-19 lockdowns have led to surges in popularity for survival and sports games. Since the outbreak – and this comes to us from PC Games N. Since the outbreak of COVID-19, we've watched as Steam has continuously posted increasing concurrent user numbers each weekend. It's an indication of how people are turning to games during social distancing lockdown periods. Now, online marketplace G2A has shared some sales data that sheds light on what games are proving the most popular. It may have seemed as a bit of surprise as they've reported that there's a 75% increase in demand for survival games over the first quarter of 2020. It seems being stuck inside a quarantine or other social distancing measure has people thinking about how they would approach a situation in which they had to fend for themselves in a hostile world, and that's being reflected in the games they're buying. Less surprising, of course, there's an increase in demand in sports-related games because there's no sports, and we need our sports fix. And even more surprising, even though while some of us may be seeking to avoid games about viruses and plagues, it seems that many people have had their interest in these themes renewed, as everybody's playing Plague Inc., State of Decay, and Division 2. So, you know, and also Resident Evil 3. Resident Evil 3 is about a city under lockdown because of a virus outbreak pandemic, while everybody's indoors during a virus outbreak pandemic. As Yahtzee Croshaw said, it would have been less bad timing if the zombies had eaten toilet rolls instead of brains.
Yeah, talk about Gameception.
So yeah, I mean, I'm playing a little bit more. The funny thing is that I'm not playing more than I usually do. A lot of it is just now doing nothing. There's just so many video games I can play before I start getting... I feel like I'm wasting my time, even though I can't be. It's like when you have too many sweets, and it's like at some point you get sick.
Yeah. I mean, I will say this. A big part of sports games has been that a lot of sports aren't happening anymore. And so you do have a lot of different leagues that are like having the player, like some of the players are jumping into online streaming and even like
fuck NBA 2K20, because that's the thing that everybody's talking about, even though it's a piece of shit.
Yeah, unfortunately there's no better one.
I will say this though, I am really I was looking forward to it before, but now I'm really looking forward to it, and that's Super Mega Baseball 3.
I am amazing. So into Super Mega Baseball 3. Everything I've seen about it looks so good, and I cannot wait to get my hands on that game.
I spoke to the developers and said, you know, one of my suggestions is to have people be able to make their own decals from scratch you know, sort of like a pixel by pixel paint program. And they said, that's a good idea. We'll put it into, you know, and so hopefully they adopt that.
Do have, and their last development, have you seen their last?
They have more decals, but you still have to. It's still not, you know, truly customizable.
There's yeah.
decals and stuff like that, but I want to be able to create decals from scratch.
Right. They added some warping tools and a few other things to it.
I saw that in the titles. So you can stretch, you can bend, you can do that little thing in which it goes outward.
Yeah, but that game is looking like it'll probably be one of the it makes me think of like it has an attitude about it that makes me think of like the old Neo Geo super baseball stars too.
Yeah, when you hit someone in the head, they just do that twirl and then fall down like a plank. the thing that's best about Super Mega Baseball, which makes it for everybody, is that you can adjust the difficulty any way you like with the ego system. For those who don't know, it goes from 0 to, what is it, 90, 99? I don't think – it doesn't go to 100, or does it go to 80? Anyway, but here's the thing. If you put it at like 5, little kids can play it. You know, 5-year-olds can play it. It'll be that easy. But if you put it up to, say, 80, it'll really be a challenge. And the best part is that you can – you can make hitting a 50, pitching a 75, and fielding a 20. Say you don't like the fielding and you're really bad at it. You can make the fielding as easy as possible, but make the other two parts of the game really, really hard. And when you do, what happens is the ego affects what score you get after playing games, because there's a larger score. Not that people might care, but you know, it does reward you for playing harder. And that's what I think people love the best about Super Mega Baseball, and that it is realistic. It's very cartoony, but underneath that cartooniness is a real hardcore baseball game.
Yeah, it definitely has like it definitely has the settings in it to where you can make it like as arcadey or as hardcore as you want it to be.
Yeah. And the big, big new feature is they finally put in a real franchise mode. I think it's for 20 or 30 years. I'm trying to remember which one.
It's pretty intense. Like, your players actually get old. They develop, like, either positive or negative traits as they get older.
I would like to see them get gray hair.
rookies.
I'd like to see them physically get older.
Rookies, if they do well, they'll like try to renegotiate with you for contracts, and you'll have to either, like, bid against them and win their favor, or they'll move on.
Yeah. Like I said, Super Mega Baseball 2 was my go-to game, even if there was no real, quote-unquote, you know, no real baseball game. Sorry to insult Super Mega Baseball by saying that, you know, but there was no 2K game, and, you know, and the only option was RBI Baseball, which until this year has been absolute crap. And I think that's one of the reasons, because RBI Baseball is published by Major League Baseball. And they decided, they told Sony, you know what, we can't do this. You better make this multi-platform, or else we're going to tell EA, hey, guess what? We're considering letting you make a baseball game again. And that's the last thing Sony wants, is to have EA making a baseball game. Because everybody remembers MVP Baseball.
The funny thing is that I don't remember MVP Baseball, and that probably speaks to MVP Baseball.
Well, I think the last good one was 2005, so that might have been before your time. I preferred High Heat Baseball 2000 myself.
I really liked RBI Baseball back in the day, but I don't know. I haven't really looked into what it's been like in this recent ones.
Yeah, it's basically just been the show in RBA Baseball and Super Mega. But getting back to Super Mega, you know, like I said, it's the real deal. I am anxious for it. You know, this is the first time they're not going to have it on Game Pass. They're not going to have it on Xbox Live games, and they're actually going to sell for $50. But that comes with the fact that they're absolutely not going to have any DLC. Everything is going to be included in one game. And they also have the Pennant Race mode, which is going to be multi-platform again.
Yeah. And they're also talking about post-launch content.
Yeah. But
which is also going to be free.
But you don't have to worry about, say, getting, you know, having to pay for decals and stuff like that.
Yeah, you don't have to, like, pay for a season pass or anything.
Yeah. Anyways, we're going to move on to the next item. Go ahead, TJ.
All right. Animal Crossing trading is being ruined by absurd trader fees. From Game Revolution. Animal Crossing trading can be a wholesome experience for some, but others are ruining it with mandatory trading fees. Some Animal Crossing New Horizons entrepreneurs recognize an opportunity when they see one, and they have no problem capitalizing on their advantage. If you're unfamiliar with Animal Crossing New Horizons, here's a quick primer on trading. A big part of the game is collecting items and villagers. Some of these just can't be acquired without trading. Even if you get an item of your own, it's often easier to trade for it than waiting to get lucky. While some people have conduct their Animal Crossing trading fairly and politely, others are keen to make a quick buck. Some folks are simply charging absurd prices for rare items, but others are charging people just to set foot on their island. One of the most glaring examples of is the Animal Crossing trading website, Turnip Exchange. Turnips are an item that can be sold for profit, but they only last 1 week. People therefore want to get the best prices possible, and the lucky few are charging an arm and a leg to get through the door. For example, entry fee per run, choose one, 10, oh my god, there's like a formula here for this.
Oh, yeah.
Ten Nook Miles tickets, or 8 gold or 8 rusted parts, or 4 large star fragments. Pay up front or you'll be kicked. So, Scott, what are the values of gold ore and rusted parts and large star fragments, et cetera, et cetera?
Okay, the Nook Miles, you have to generate 2,000 miles per ticket to get. So that's 20,000 miles right there. 8 gold ore, you have to, oh my god, you have to mine stone for so much just to get one gold ore. You might get 1 gold ore per week, you know. And then 8 rusted parts is you only get a rusted part when Oliver visits you, and you have to find his computer phone component. And what happens is another player has to be with you picking up the parts as you're picking them, and then they turn into rusted parts. Otherwise, you might get 1 or 2, so those are rare. The 4 large star fragments, that's not as bad. When the clear night happens, usually on Sunday night, you'll see the meteor showers, and you could just hit A every time you see one and just sit there for an hour hitting A, hitting A, hitting A, and then the next morning you'll get a ton of star fragments. So that one's not as bad. But still, this whole thing is obnoxious because I have a
story. Yeah, Scott, how does it feel to have your game turned into EVE Online?
Man, dude, it's not cool. Okay, so I went on Reddit, and we were talking about the Cherry Blossom Festival and how the Bunny Day stuff was eclipsing it, and it was hard to get the Cherry Blossom stuff. So for me, I was able to get the lantern, the cherry pouch fauché thing, but I wasn't able to get the bonsai or the two-branch pot plant. But and some other people weren't able to get the lantern at all. So I offered to have someone come over, and I would build the lantern for them if they brought the materials. And they brought the materials, and I built like 10 or 12 lanterns for them, and I showed them off my island, and I feel like I made a friend by not charging them anything other than that. Just bring the materials, and I'll build the stuff for you, because it really sucked not to be able to get those recipes, because you're right. Now, you know, I'm going to have to go online to trade to even get those items or possibly the recipe, and somebody might charge me an arm and a leg just to get the bonsai recipe. You know, it's crazy.
If there's a way, they're going to do it. That's how gold farming is.
Yeah. It's just frustrating because, you know, otherwise I'll have to, like, wait a year just for that festival to come by again.
Yeah, that's unique about Animal Crossing is that there's games that do this, but they're usually cell phone free play games like Animation Throwdown, in which, you know. But here, or to tell you the truth, World of Warcraft. But in World of Warcraft, all of their seasonal celebrations, they aren't be all end all. You know, it's not, you're not going to feel FOMO if you miss out on those. Animal Crossing, I think people are going to have major FOMO if they don't.
Because, you know, if I didn't get that lantern, it would have sucked because I've decorated half my island with that lantern, the Blossom Viewing Lantern, and it was really a cool find to get, and I was lucky to get it. And, and that would have really sucked to, I would see, sometimes I get villagers and they decorate their house and I see the bonsai in their house and I can't do anything. I can't ask them, hey, do you want to trade for this? The option hasn't come up. I mean, maybe it will eventually, but it is frustrating because you see that and you're like, I'd like to get this, and there's no way to get it, you know, unless I go online trading and hopefully somebody doesn't price gouge me, you know, if I'm lucky.
TJ?
I never thought there would be like a black market in Animal yep. Crossing of all yep. things.
Mm-hmm.
Accessibility, you're going to have a black market for it.
That's what we were talking about on Reddit. I was like seeing this happening because like I'm getting all these blossoms. Dude, you could get the blossoms? I didn't even know you could collect blossoms. And they were like, yeah, and there's recipes. And they're like, there's recipes? Because there was a glitch apparently. This was the other thing. Isabelle is supposed to tell you about this festival and it would trigger everything. And she gives you a recipe. But unfortunately, she might not register it to tell you for a few days. And so you're missing out on a few days of getting this stuff. And so, you know, a lot of people missed it. And then they went online and found out, oh, this is an event and there's recipes and you're supposed to collect the petals. And so I just went around collecting the petals nonstop. I ignored everything else. Just collect petals while I can because everything is going to go all World of Warcraft in here. You know, market wise, and it's like I gotta get these while I can. So I have some petals, so if I get the bonsai recipe, I'll be able to make myself a bonsai. But otherwise,
it'll be interesting to see where Animal Crossing is a year from now.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. I mean, this is part of why I wanted to get the game now and not later, because I feel like now.
Well, yeah, I mean, here's the thing. Animal Crossing is not a narrative game. I mean, Final Fantasy right. VII is a narrative game. The story's not gonna change.
But like this, because like when I got New Leaf, I think most of the craze, most of the hype and everything had already long since passed, and it was kind of hard to get some stuff because you have to get houses, you have to travel around, you have to go and have the thing on Street Pass to get houses to show up on the Happy Home thing, and then you can buy stuff through there, and that was a lot easier. And you know, I got like three or four houses on that thing, and there's like eight or more lots, and so you know, it just wasn't. You know, I just felt like I was missing most of the. There's people still active on it, but not as much. And I remember I finally had to go online to get a chess piece that just would not show up in Tom Nook's store at all for years. I was like, I want this damn last chess piece. So I went online and found a nice person that gave me the chess piece for free. I guess they just were that generous, and they just gave it to me. It's like, here you go. And so that completed my collection. There will be, I guess, a phase of these price gougers and whatnot, and then there'll come up a time where things calm down and you'll be able to trade for stuff without feeling like you're paying an arm and a leg just to get it.
You're just making me want to pick up Stardew Valley now.
Yeah, that is a lot more relaxing.
Actually, you know, your thing about wanting to get that item reminds me of I really want the Philip J. Fry mythic card in Animation Throwdown. I mean, I have Bender and I have Leela. You know, I have points towards Professor Farnsworth, but so many of my strategy revolves around my legendary Philip J. Fry card, but I want a mythic Philip J. Fry card.
Oh, okay. Well, I guess you have to get to grinding or something or find someone to trade with.
I mean, I also have Peggy from King of the Hill as a mythic, and Stewie from Family Guy as a mythic. But a lot of my cards are Futurama based because I get bonuses if I do Futurama. So I have Peggy and I have Stewie, but because they're powerful cards. Oh, and yeah, I just recently got Zoidberg as a mythic card, which is awesome.
Oh, Zoidberg, yeah. Gotta have him as mythic.
Yeah. And his card, see, here's the thing. His other card is a common card, a gray card, but his mythic card, the flavor text says, "Hooray, I'm useful now."
Aww. Why not Zoidberg?
My friends and Zoidberg. But yeah, I can do Zoidberg's voice. I can't do it right now, but anyways, yeah, I mean, actually, you know, I don't play Animation Breakdown as fervently as I used to. I don't spend a penny on it anymore. The funny thing is the game that I become a whale on is Cooking Dash, and I find that hard to believe.
Wow.
I'm also heavy into Yahtzee with friends, but here's the thing. I won $200 worth of dice in the game without spending a penny. That game is very, very soft sell. I've never paid a penny for it, but it's given me $200 worth of stuff in it for free.
That's pretty great.
Yeah. So, and I finally joined a group that really goes hard on the community competitions. And we're not right now number 9, so we're hoping to maintain that and get – I just got a nice die that was Graveyard at Night die, which looks really nice. It's not an animated die, but it's a nice die. Wow. I'm sorry. I wish Paul was here to talk about his love of cell phone games.
I wonder if Paul plays Animal Crossing at all.
I don't know. I know that he really wanted Dungeon Keeper to work. So he's doing his thing. I don't even know if he's playing games much anymore between teaching and designing escape rooms.
Yeah.
Oh.
So
he found his niche.
Yeah. I mean, when he visited New York, he dragged me to an escape room. So it wasn't a very good one, but we had fun.
That's good.
Anyways, look for our show notes at GamingPodcast.net, along with industry news and our gaming history articles. We enjoy feedback, so leave us comments on our blog at GamingPodcast.net. Also, hit us up at Facebook.com/GamingPodcast. Subscribe to us on iTunes. Leave us some iTunes comments. You can find me on Twitter at Jonah Falcon.
You can find me at Johnny Chugs.
You can find me at Alpha Shard.
And we will see you next week.
Happy gaming, everyone.
Have fun. Be cool. Play games, y'all.